I want to thank you for tuning into the Naked Podcast. I'm your host, Emma Hislop, and today I'm interviewing someone incredibly down to earth, and her name is Remy Park, and she is the creator and founder of the blog, Instagram, and YouTube channel, Veggiekins. I think that Remy has so much going for her, and in this episode, we dive into a million topics. I totally wish I could have talked about everything with her because she has so much that she's doing with her life, but we dived into some deep and heavy conversations that are really near and dear to both of our hearts. And before I jump into this episode, I want to chat a bit about an event that I have coming up in my city, St. John's. So on March 8th, International Women's Day, I'm hosting a Women in Business panel at Johnny Ruth, where I will be joined by six other incredible women in the business world, where we're going to chat business, what it means to make a dream into a reality, as well as answering some of your dying questions that you might have about creating a business. I have so many panelists from different backgrounds, from staging, hair, makeup, the food industry, fitness, digital media, and more. So I really hope I can see you there. It's going to be an incredible evening, and I can't wait to have a conversation with you all. And I'm going to dive right into this episode, and I hope you enjoy. So I want to thank Remy for coming on the podcast. I actually used to watch her YouTube videos back in high school, so it's such an honor to have her on the podcast.
I actually didn't know that. So funny.
Yeah, I actually started watching them back in high school, but we actually met over the past summer. I believe it was in September when I was in New York, so having her on just felt natural. And I want her to give you some information about herself because she's an incredible person, and I'm so happy to have her on.
Yeah, thank you for having me. So my name is Remy. I am a vegan and gluten-free health and wellness blogger. It's a little bit of yoga, wellness, lots of food, a little bit of lifestyle. It's kind of like a little bit of everything now. And I've been doing this full-time for almost 3 years. I live in New York. And yeah, I got to meet Emma in the summer, right? We had a matcha together, which was amazing. So I'm really excited to chat.
Yeah, we're both equally obsessed with matcha. So if you need any matcha tips, probably go to Remy though, because there's a ton of matcha tips on her account. But something I kind of want to dive into is I think everyone goes through a down or they're in a rut before they find this wellness community and what they know as health. We always are evolving and we're always changing our definition of health. But I kind of want to know who were you and what were you doing before you started your account?
So like you said, I definitely came from a place of being unwell, and that's kind of what forced me to realize that I need to take my health seriously. And I guess I could say that applies to both my physical and mental health. I, at the very age of around 7, developed an eating disorder. So I struggled with anorexia from 7 to about maybe 13, 14. And I think part of the reason why I was a little bit more vulnerable to developing an eating disorder is that I've also been diagnosed with OCD, which happens to, I guess, occur hand in hand very often because there are a lot of similarities. For example, when you have OCD, it's all about control, order, rituals, an obsessive nature. And a lot of that ties into sort of eating behavior mindset. Or eating disorder behavior mindset. So yeah, that was something that I've struggled with for a very long time. I think that naturally I'm kind of prone to being a little bit more of that anxious person, sort of a neurotic type of person, struggled with anxiety and depression on and off. So that's kind of what my background was. And mentally, I've always kind of struggled a little bit in terms of feeling happy. Feeling healthy, feeling secure in my body and in life, I guess. And then when I got older, I think a lot of those behaviors kind of manifested themselves in other ways. So around, I guess, 13, I started drinking alcohol and using drugs. At the time, I lived in China. So to give you a little bit of context, it's a weird place because I went to an international school and there is a drinking age, but it's not really something that's reinforced. So you could go to like a 7-Eleven or a convenience store and grab a year, even if you looked like you were 10 years old. Nobody's really checking IDs. At least they weren't when I lived there. And you could go to clubs, which we did, and you'd pay probably about $20 US or so, and it would be open bar, which is just like a recipe for disaster when you're young and you don't know what you're doing. But it's a part of the culture there, I guess, growing up. And I started super young. And after I had my first few drinks and tried drugs for the first time, I kind of didn't really see them as anything scary anymore. I was like, okay, it's not really that big of a deal. So my attitude towards them completely changed. And I would say that it started out being recreational, definitely for fun. You know, I'm not going to lie, I had great fun nights with friends when I was younger. But when I really noticed that it was kind of an issue was when I started to use drugs and drink when I was alone. Weekdays without friends, not even at the club, in my room. And it was almost like this response, I think, to dealing with depression. For me, I think it was a little bit of an escape because it was an easy way to kind of forget about what was happening in my life, whether that was, I don't know, bullying or just struggling with mental health. Of course, it made everything worse because I was on medication at the time. I was on antidepressants, and you're not really supposed to mess around with other depressants when you're taking an antidepressant, and alcohol is a big depressant. So that was kind of not a smart move. And then, of course, just playing with drugs in general was not good at all. I think for most people, it's not a good situation, but especially if you have a history of mental health issues, it's just, you're asking kind of for a mess. So that was my experience with it. I used drugs, I drank pretty heavily until college. And it was funny because I think that's kind of the age when people start to drink for the first time. And it's really common that it's exciting and it's fun and everyone wants to do it because you haven't really been able to, before that point. But it was interesting because when I was talking to new friends in college, I realized that a lot of my behaviors weren't normal. So, you know, I'd tell my friends about my high school experiences and be like, did you guys ever do, you know, X, Y, and Z? And they're like, no. And so then I started to realize that a lot of the things I was doing were not normal. And I think coming back to the US really helped give me a little bit of that perspective. I also took advantage of my college's free therapy sessions. So we got a couple free sessions each semester. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to really go and take care of this eating disorder stuff, not really realizing that alcohol and drugs were an issue at all. I kind of was in denial about that. And I think that's one thing about mental health. We're really good at lying in general, but also lying to ourselves when we have problems. So, you know, I went in there for eating disorder help, ended up getting help in so many different ways and really started to take my health seriously. And around the same time, I also went vegan, which I think really had a huge impact because once I physically was healthier on the inside, you know, digestion was going smoother, I was eating better. I feel like when I did drink, I felt it a lot more because it just went right through me. My tolerance was not that great to begin with, but once I got kind of healthier, I really, really felt an impact. So that physical feeling was also another reinforcement and really encouraged me to kind of stay on the healthy path. So I started going to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, NA meetings. I went to therapy for a little bit, rehab treatment, and yeah, it was a journey, but I'm really glad that I was able to do it in college because I think it's a luxury to have a little bit more free time to do that kind of thing. Once I started working a corporate job, obviously I wasn't able to stay on top of it as much. And it really kind of fell to the side. And I realized that when I started to kind of inch closer towards a relapse. And that's kind of how I ended up doing what I do now, actually, because I quit my job after about 3 months. It was my first job out of college. And I quit with the intention of going to rehab full time because I felt the urges coming back, this bad behavior, kind of like when your energy is not at 100%, you know, all your worst behaviors kind of just creep back up because you just don't have enough energy to manage. And so I quit my job, committed to therapy, and then ended up being able to do this full time, which is amazing. And then I met you, had matcha, and here we are.
I think, like, I know myself, when I was going through an eating disorder, I had this breaking point. And my breaking point was when my family members started to get mad at me because I was lying to myself. Like you said, when you're struggling with mental health, you think all of your behaviors are normal. At that time, you're like, no, I'm the epitome of health. Like, anyone else who tells me otherwise, like, can go screw off. Like, I don't want to listen to this. But was there ever like a breaking point when you were struggling with your addiction and stuff that you were like, maybe this isn't normal? Cause I know I had this like massive, realization when someone got mad at me and I got in an argument. I was like, okay, maybe it isn't normal to be doing all of these things. But I know you kind of said when you start to compare, that's when you had your biggest epiphany that, you know, you were struggling with something. But what made you kind of be like, okay, I need to change? My biggest fear was that, like, this sounds dark, but I wasn't going to wake up, you know?
Yeah, no, that's so true. I think it's important to remember too that mental health, it affects us, of course, but then also everyone that loves us and supports us. And a lot of the times, that's kind of the side effect that we don't think about. So sometimes I think people think that mental illness is a selfish thing, but it's kind of something that's out of our control. We're just not physically in the right mindset, and biologically too, right? Like, we know that when you have an eating disorder, your brain function and structure actually changes a lot. So we're literally not in the right mindset. And so I guess the breaking point for me, I was kind of lucky because eating disorder wise, when I moved to a new high school, I moved to one that was super duper athletic and I just physically couldn't keep up anymore. Like, I really noticed, because in elementary school, when it kind of started, I sort of gave up on gymnastics and stuff like that. Like, it was really fun, but I think I was too tired to keep up with it. And, you know, I didn't want to be in a leotard. It was a lot of body dysmorphia and just being self-conscious. So I stopped with the gymnastics, and then I wasn't really an athletic person. And I always told myself, oh, I'm just like not a sports person. I'm not athletic, you know, whatever. And then I moved to another school where we were kind of forced to be athletic. We had PE and it was pretty serious, and I just couldn't keep up. So in the beginning, I remember it being really frustrating because I felt like a failure for not being able to maintain the strict regimen around eating that I used to have. And then it kind of slowly resolved itself because I just could not keep up with how little I was eating to do as much as I was doing. So in that sense, it kind of resolved itself. But I would say addiction wise, for me, I think it got really frustrating. I kind of got tired of my own bullshit, you know, like mm-hmm. I realized that what I was doing was having a huge impact on people that didn't deserve it at all. So I guess kind of similar to what you were saying, my boyfriend has been with me through all of this basically. And I just felt like at a certain point, it was so unfair to him. And when we were in college, that was when we first started long distance as well. So it was really important that we had that trust. And honestly, I didn't really trust myself. It was really difficult for me to know what I would do. If I'd go out, I'd be very, very concerned when I woke up the next morning and like frantically try to remember what I did the night before. So that was, I think, for me, the point of realization that like this has an impact on people other than myself.
Mm-hmm. And I think that like it is so challenging. Even my friends who are into wine and, you know, they're chefs and stuff, like that's their job. And they're like, it's hard to be sober in social situations. And I've been sober my entire life. Like, I grew up with family members having addiction problems. And I know myself, like, I have a very addictive personality. Like, if I like matcha, I'm not going to have one matcha a day. Like, I'm going to have multiple matchas a day. Like, if I like something, I'm like, I go balls to the wall with it. Like, I have to have it, you know? So I think that people overthink though, when people are like, oh, I don't drink, like people aren't actually judging you. I think that's like just a social thing that people think exists, but I feel like it doesn't. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think that's really true. A lot of the times it's all in our head. I mean, sometimes people might be judging you, and if they are, I think that's the wrong kind of person to be around in general, because what does it matter what another person is or isn't drinking, right? I think that maybe it comes from a place of feeling like you kind of know that your behavior is maybe not the best, and you know, I've had some friends tell me like, it makes me feel bad when I'm around you because I realize what I'm doing to myself. And I'm like, well, I'm just here. I'm not trying to make you feel bad. And I never really talk about these things. I just don't drink or I grab a seltzer, you know? So it's just kind of interesting. I think it's a projection of what people are feeling themselves.
Exactly. And I think it's just people overthinking. I'm like, if you don't want to drink, like nobody's forcing you, like just do your own thing at the end of the day. But it's like, how did you kind of find veganism? And where do you kind of see the future of food going? And do you kind of see it growing in New York?
I think I found veganism kind of from a health perspective at first. So a funny thing is that when I did have an eating disorder, and this was like elementary school, so way beyond like 20 years ago, okay, maybe not 20, but like 15 years ago, when I think most people didn't really know what veganism was, and I didn't know either, but I just threw it out there. I was like, oh, I'm vegan. And it was for me just an excuse to eat less things, you know? So I really loved that aspect, but I was not actually vegan at any point. Like, I was definitely still eating cheese and chicken and all these things. But later on in life, I discovered it because I started making dairy-free mac and cheese. I realized that I had an intolerance to dairy. So I was like, I need to cut down on dairy and try some dairy-free recipes. But I think by nature, a lot of dairy-free recipes are accidentally vegan too. And that was kind of my first step into the vegan world. And I did my research and decided I would try a week of no meat either and just see how I felt. So completely, basically vegan. And it was another feeling of like physical wellness. Like, you just feel well, you know, you feel energetic. You feel a physical difference in your digestion. And I think that difference alone is enough to, you know, make you want to go vegan full time. So I did. And then the rest kind of came later, the ethics, the environment, the animals. I learned all of that. And I think that's what made me stay vegan versus just seeing it as a diet. I really embrace it as a lifestyle. And even though it's not related really to my eating disorder at all, I noticed that I do have a lot more love for food now than I did, obviously, when I was in my ED years. I felt really good about the food that I was choosing. And I kind of knew that with every meal that I was having, I was making a really kind choice for myself, but also animals, the environment. And that felt really, really good. So it almost kind of helped me to rebond with food again. Mm-hmm. And I think that was something that I didn't expect at all. But some people, I think, see it as something restrictive, and it can be. I think it's all about intention and where you are with your relationship with food. But for the most part, it's just been really great for me. And another thing I think that helps too is that when you're eating whole plants, there are a lot less labels to look at and calories to focus on and things like that. It's a lot more about feeling and thinking about nutrients and like, what is this vegetable doing for me, or how does this make me feel, versus thinking about like, what are the numbers on this bag of lettuce, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I think the biggest thing is like, people ask me, they're like, oh, is veganism just restrictive? I'm like, literally, you can make anything that isn't vegan vegan these days. Like, if you still love burgers and you want to have a burger, you can go out and buy Beyond Meat. Like, here they serve a whole bunch of those fast food options if that's something that someone wants to have. You can still make cookies, you can still make cakes. Like, choose a flax egg over a regular egg. Like, there's so many substitutions that I don't see it as a restrictive thing. And like you said, it's like, it's almost like a creative outlet for me too. Like, oh, I want to make something that I used to have back 10 years ago when I was a kid, but I want to make it vegan. And I think for myself, it's like this more like inspirational and creative way of cooking. And that's what piqued my interest in cooking. Like, I did not cook growing up. And then eventually when I came to veganism, and this was kind of the peak of veganism. Like, I will say it was 3.5 years ago. I've almost been vegan for 4 years. But like, do you remember 3.5, 4 years ago, veganism was like the banana diet? So I got
raw till 4, high carb, low fat.
Yeah. I literally thought that's what veganism was, 'cause that's what I saw in mainstream media everywhere. Like, people having 30 bananas a day. And I was like, veganism's crazy. But then when I started following accounts like yours and other people, I was like, actually, it's not. Like, it's regular food in regular amounts. So thank you.
So true. Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. I do remember those days. And yeah, it's so true. You can be vegan in so many different ways. I just think it's so funny how we kind of came from a place of being afraid of food. And then look at us now, we're making food every single day. That's our job. I love food and I love cooking and sharing it with other people. And it's funny when people say veganism is restrictive, because I feel like some of the more trendier and sort of acceptable diets nowadays are a lot more restrictive, kind of villainizing an entire macronutrient group. And that's like, to me, that's a little crazy. But, you know, no hate to other diets. It's just, I think it could be said about any single diet. You could do it in a whole food way, or you could do it in sort of a processed, fun junk food kind of way. And neither is right or wrong. It just depends on what you want, I guess, for your body.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that like you said, veganism is more of a lifestyle. And if you approach it as that rather than a diet, like I think the word diet just itself is like, everyone thinks restriction.
Right.
So I'm always like plant-based vegan lifestyle, because I think it, yes, it doesn't put this like label on someone that like, oh, they restrict this, they restrict that. Like, I think it's about celebrating the things that you do eat rather than the things that you don't eat. But have you seen?
Oh, I just wanted to like take a moment to talk about plant-based, because I feel like that phrase has taken on a new meaning lately, and I don't know when it happened, but I'm just like, has it ever happened to you where you go shopping and you buy something that is plant-based and you just kind of assume it's vegan? Because I feel like a couple years ago, plant-based was vegan, just maybe not lifestyle vegan. So aside from like maybe honey here and there, but now I feel like plant-based, sometimes there's like eggs in there, there's like collagen, for example. And I'm like, wait a second. When did this phrase kind of change its meaning?
I haven't noticed that, but I feel like our labeling and our, I guess, kind of regulations are a bit different here in Canada. But I feel like in the US, you guys are like bumping with like all these Whole Foods and all these organic companies that I feel like plant-based has probably came more into like mainstream, and they're like, oh, plant-based, it's mostly vegan.
Right. It's like a lot of plants, which I like though. I do love that, because I feel like one thing that we can agree on is no matter what diet you're doing, mostly plants is probably the best way to go. So even if that's not fully vegan for someone, just a lot of plants I think is so important.
Mm-hmm. That's what I tell everyone, because I never want to be that person that's like, you have to eat this, like you have to eat this exact thing. If you don't eat this, like you're not good enough. Because I think that turns people away rather than showing them you can make this without these ingredients, but you don't even have to say without those ingredients, because they're just going to make it anyways and not realize that it's that like they just made something vegan.
Yeah, totally. I definitely feel the same way.
But have you noticed a big switch in New York City, probably in the last 5 years, from when you started being vegan 5 years ago rather than today? Because I know for myself, like here, even 2 years ago, I want to say the only vegan plant milk things were like the brand Silk. And now I have like 50 options.
Yeah, definitely. I think that it's acceptable. And I think that it's really interesting to see omnivores at vegan restaurants more. I feel like years ago when I would go to a vegan restaurant, you would almost always see like a friend or something, because there were only so many vegans in the city. You all kind of knew each other and there were only so many restaurants you could go to. Whereas now I'll see friends that aren't vegan. I'll see people coming in from work for like a vegan lunch at, you know, some kind of vegan fast casual place. I think that's awesome. It's definitely something that is not abnormal anymore, which I love. And, you know, there are a lot of restaurants I think that aren't even 100% vegan, but they're offering vegan options. And that is enough for me. Like, I know some people are really into supporting 100% vegan businesses, but for me, it's like, if you're providing an option, I think that's incredible and it's a start. So I love to see that, but definitely spoiled with food. I kind of feel like no matter what cuisine of food you want, you can find a vegan version here. Like, we've definitely got Indian, there's vegan Mexican, vegan Italian, vegan Japanese. I think we have like vegan Ethiopian food even, which is so incredible. So we're definitely spoiled for sure. And I know it can be harder if you're not living in New York City, but you know, plants are everywhere. So at least we have that.
That's very true. When I went there, I was like, okay, where am I eating tonight? And like at home, like, there's one place like completely vegan, you know? But what are some of your top restaurants? And I want to add that, like, if anyone who is going to New York City or lives in New York City, before you add them, I have to say that the ABCV, have you been there before? I'm sure you have.
Oh my gosh. I actually just went last week for the first time in a while. I love it. It's so good.
It's so good. I had their like eggplant dosa and it was just like literally the best thing I've ever had in my life. And the vegan croissants. So good.
Oh. I think I've told you this before, but I'm actually allergic to gluten. But if it comes to a vegan croissant, I will always eat it. Like, I'll just come prepared with my digestive enzymes and all of that. Like, I don't care. I have to eat it.
Yeah. Like, I'm literally someone who I'm like, I just want to go to Paris to like scout out some vegan croissants. Like,
yeah. Love a good vegan croissant. So favorite restaurants. Let me think. There are actually so many. It's kind of funny. Like, I always want to sit down and write a guide, but I just feel like I can't because it's something that I would have to update like every week almost. Like, there's always new spots. But some of the places that I go to the most, really like Erin McKenna's Bakery, just because it's all vegan and gluten-free. So I feel like I have a world of options. It's really, really good. Orchard Grocer, I really like. And it's kind of like a mini marketplace where they have like specialty vegan items. They have like herbivorous butcher and like things that are kind of hard to find. But they also have vegan sandwiches and they have like just egg, vegan cheese, like all these different things. So I kind of like that. And they're just the sweetest people. So I also just love going for that reason. What else do I love? Love ABCV. Probably my favorite restaurant ever is Double Zero Pizza. And it's a Matthew Kenny restaurant. It's vegan, but they have some gluten-free crusts too. And the cheese is like house made. It's really, really nice. I'm not usually like a fancy restaurant kind of girl. I'm really into like fast casual, simple, wholesome, hearty. But this place is so good. Whenever I have a dinner with someone, I'm like, want to go to Double Zero. So I've taken like all my family there. If I ever have like a business meeting and it's a dinner, I'll go there. What else do I like? I don't know. What are some of your faves? I'm trying to remember where you went to when you came.
Well, this isn't really a vegan specific place, but Chacha and for matcha.
Yeah. Chacha. Yes.
And have you been to Matcha Full yet?
Yes, I love Matcha Full. It's so, so great. I love the hojicha there especially.
And they had a pharmacy pop-up, I believe. I didn't get to it because it was like literally open like 3 days after I left. I was like, you're kidding me. Pharmacy's so good. I went to the one in London and I was disappointed that I couldn't go to the pop-up.
Yeah, I've heard a rumor that they're trying to look for a permanent location because so far the response has been really good to the food. So I'm crossing my fingers. I'm trying to manifest that because I love their food. It's probably one of my favorite vegan restaurants in the world, I think.
It's so good. And something like you have so much going on for you. Like you have your blog, you have your Instagram. And I also want to talk a bit about YouTube because I'm someone who I'm like, I love watching YouTube videos. I eventually might start a YouTube channel. I keep saying I'm going to do it. I don't know if I actually will, but I want to know what kind of like prompted you to be like, I want to start on YouTube and I want to share videos because I know for myself, I think it's a great way to connect with an audience rather than through, you know, a caption on Instagram.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because even to this day, I think I still feel the most insecure about YouTube just because I'm a very introverted person and I kind of feel like YouTubers are known to be this loud, very extroverted, I don't care what anyone thinks of me type of person. So honestly, it's still hard for me sometimes. I'll actually like watch old videos and within like 3 months, I don't want to see my old videos anymore. Like I want to delete them. So my policy is just upload them, don't watch them, and like just be a little bit more easygoing about it because I think that fear stands in the way of us posting. And honestly, I don't think anyone is judging us as much as we are judging ourselves. So I just kind of put that out there. I tell myself that, you know, it's in a way vegan activism, putting stuff out there on YouTube. So that's like one way I like to think of it. I just think of it as kind of like a resource because like you said, there's just so much more space to talk about things. I think it's hard to communicate the energy behind your message sometimes when you're just doing it in a caption versus being in a video where you get to, you know, have a little bit more of your energy present. So it's taken a lot of time. It started out with just food videos where I was just cooking and showing the process. And then that was the whole video. It'd be like what I eat in a day and then three recipes. And that's basically it. I wasn't in it at all. And then later on, I started to kind of put myself in it and do like travel vlogs. It was especially when I traveled that I loved to make them because I just felt like life is a little bit more exciting when you're not in your home city. And when I'm back in New York, I'm mostly in my apartment working. So I'm not exploring as much as I am when I'm like going somewhere else. So that was really fun for me, just kind of documenting different food around the world that was vegan. And still, I feel like that's when I vlog the most is when I'm traveling. So it helped me a lot. I think to practice with Instagram stories, because that was sort of my first facial exposure on Instagram. Like I was just food until a couple years ago. So I think that was kind of my jumping off point. And then from there, I was like, let me just experiment with YouTube and see how it goes. And people are a little bit more harsh on YouTube than on Instagram, I think, because your videos have more of a chance to reach people that aren't people who are following you on Instagram. So it's like, you're kind of breaking that bubble, of people that you usually reach. And it's scary, but I also think it's important because you're reaching more people that aren't already aware of this sort of, emphasis on health and wellness. And those are the people that I feel like need to hear it the most. So yeah, it makes me uncomfortable to this day, but I still do it. And I kind of enjoy it actually. I just don't watch my videos once they're up. So
yeah, that's the same thing with me. Like I'll edit my podcast and then it goes on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. And then I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to listen to that. I suggest you go listen to it if you want to learn about this, but I won't listen to it again after already recording because I listened to my voice.
Right.
Like, oh my gosh, why did I say that? Like, yeah, but I agree with you. It's like our fear holds us back from doing what we actually want to do rather than just jumping off and be like, okay, I'm going to do this now and see where it goes.
Yeah, but I definitely feel like you should start a YouTube channel if you're interested, because even if you don't want to talk to the camera, your videos could be completely focused on like the food and just kind of imagery and sort of like from your perspective kind of thing. And you could even do a voiceover or not. I used to make videos that were what I eat in a day. It would just be like shots of food and I wouldn't even talk in them or anything. It would just be like very self-explanatory. Like breakfast, I made a smoothie bowl. Lunch was some kind of like whatever, salad or sandwich. And that's another great way to kind of just dip your toes in, because I feel like you definitely have a knack for like visuals. So I feel like it would just be so much fun to see it in video format.
Well, thank you. I might actually start that up. Like who knows, 2020, I could be starting a YouTube channel. we'll see. We'll see. But also you talked a little bit about your travel there, and I want you to talk about, I know you're having a bit of a little retreat that you're doing. Actually, it's not a little retreat. It's a big retreat, but I wanted you to just chat about that, 'cause that's so exciting.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely, I mean, it's little, it's my first retreat that I'm hosting, and it's really funny because I'm so bad at telling people stuff that I'm working on. I don't know if you're the same way, but it's like, I never plug myself. I get so uncomfortable, and I don't know why, because we're putting out content every single day. But when it comes to something that like is a little bit bigger than just posting on Instagram, I get so weird about it and I don't know why. So I'm glad you're asking me about it, but yeah, it's going to be, a 7-day retreat in Tulum. I picked Tulum because it was one place that I had visited. Actually, I think there's a video on my YouTube channel and it was so vegan friendly. Like sometimes there are places in the world that I kind of want to go to because they're vegan friendly. You know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. like, that's part of the pull for me sometimes. Like how easy is it going to be for me to get good vegan food? So I went and I loved it and I was like, I need to come back. And then the opportunity kind of presented itself to host a retreat there. And at first I was thinking Bali, but then I thought that Tulum was a little bit more realistic because most people coming from like the US or Europe, it's a lot closer and traveling to Bali is like a 2-day affair back and forth. So I was like, all right, let's do Tulum. And the whole purpose is going to be basically to focus on alignment, finding your true purpose and doing that through yoga that's centered around different chakras. So each day we're going to focus on different chakras, and then we'll have meditation, sound baths, and then workshops around self-growth that kind of focus on whatever it is that we're focusing on that day. So for example, if we're working on like throat chakra, maybe we'll have how to like express yourself and find your power, how to communicate in the workplace, how to assert yourself, how to stand up for yourself in business, things like that. Because the girl that I'm working with on these retreats has been an entrepreneur since college. She actually founded Conscious Tea. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but
you also did a collab with them. I'm going to plug you for yourself.
Yeah. And she's just been a very, not risky, but how do I like she's willing to take risks, and she's always been an entrepreneur. So she really inspires me to step out of my comfort zone a little bit more. But yeah, I'm really excited. It's going to be a lot of fun, and yeah, we are keeping it kind of little actually, because we want to keep it intimate. I just want to make sure it's like an experience for everyone where they can disconnect from who they are in their day-to-day life, like who they are at their office or in their work position or in their families, and then really take the time to just be with themselves without all of that attachment to, you know, exterior, so they can do the work. So I'm just really excited to be back in Tulum, but I am also excited for the retreat.
I'm so excited for you. So when is this happening again?
So it's going to be in April from the 22nd to the 28th, I believe.
So you get to escape the cold Well, it's going to be spring in New York, but for here, I will literally be still snow covered. So I would very much love to be there. Like I was saying the other day, I was like, I just need to leave. Like I need to leave. I don't know where, but just somewhere that has less snow.
Yes. My friends and I always say, like, how to survive a Northeast winter is leave.
Yeah, literally just go to, I haven't been to Bali, but I'm dying to go. I see everyone like post their vegan food. I'm like, this is the main reason I want to go. Like monkeys and vegan food. I'll definitely hit that place up. But you literally have done so much, and I want you to kind of touch on your yoga teacher training, and you're a big yogi yourself, and how you kind of went into this path of yoga and how you started this new interest.
So I actually used to think yoga was really lame. The first sport that I ever did when I was younger was gymnastics. And so I was very much used to like the power, the cardio, like the hard hitting moves, you know, and the crazy flexibility and sort of like putting your body through torture in a lot of ways. I loved gymnastics, but I got injured. And I think part of that honestly was because I wasn't feeding myself properly. So I moved to dance and I thought it was kind of similar. It was like, you know, the same flexibility, a little bit of movement, not so much tumbling anymore, but definitely low impact or a little bit more low impact. And then I got injured again, which I still think was because I wasn't nourishing myself properly. I used to be very lightheaded when I was dancing because I always wanted to be smaller. And I think part of that is rooted in dance culture too. It's just, I don't know what it is about it, but there's this sort of emphasis on lines, especially ballet, right? It's really just all about the physical sometimes. And so I don't really know if that had an impact, but anyway, I moved away from dance and then I started doing yoga because it was kind of the only thing along that vein that I could really do with my injuries. And my mom actually started her yoga teacher training. I think she was around maybe 40, 43 at the time. And she can never touch her toes. She's really never been an athletic person before. So I kind of was like, this is really weird and out of character for you. But I was like, all right. And she'd come home every day and she was so excited to share with us like what she was learning and kind of practice her teaching on me. And so I picked up a little bit from her. I started getting into yoga myself and taking classes because I really thought that it was like the best form of movement for myself at the time. And yeah, I really, really fell in love with it. I actually started teaching, you know, here and there kind of before I got certified, just because friends would ask me to just lead like short flows and stuff like that. And so that was kind of what prompted me to actually get my certification. I actually started one when I was in China, which is where my parents live right now. And then because I moved and came back to the US for college, I didn't have time to finish that up. And so I thought I could like kind of catch up from where I was there because there's the same studio in China that there is here. They're like sister studios, but of course the programs are totally different. So I just had to restart. I ended up going to a teacher training that I didn't really love very much. It wasn't a very advanced practice. I think that my practice was more advanced than my teacher, which, you know, you don't have to be the best yogi to be a yoga teacher at all, or a 500 hours. Yoga is so much more than just the physical, but at the time I didn't really feel that challenged. And I think what I took away from it the most was this connection to yoga on a deeper level beyond the physical, because I really had to let go of that during my yoga training. So I'm really grateful for the yoga training that I had. I wouldn't really recommend it to other people because I did have that foundation in the beginning. And then I just feel like it just wasn't the best one that there is, but I'm so grateful for the way that it worked out. I think everything happens for a reason. And yoga has been great. I feel like it's something that has finally allowed me to see exercise and movement as something more than just, again, like calories and exerting yourself. Because that is definitely how I used to see exercise when I was in my eating disorder years. And so, yeah, I feel a lot more connected to my body. I feel like sometimes I could just sit in a hot room. Like when I was injured in November, I just went to hot yoga to just sit there and I felt no shame about it at all. I was just confidently sitting there and I was like, this is yoga too. So mm-hmm. I just love that it's very inclusive, even though some people may not feel like it is. You don't even have to be able to touch your toes to be doing yoga, you know? So that's exactly something that I love about it. And yeah, I don't know. I think it ties a lot back to like kindness, compassion, and you know, the idea of ahimsa. It's very much connected to yogi culture and being vegetarian / vegan. So yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think it's kind of like, I also grew up doing gymnastics for like 8 or 9 years. So I can totally relate to that exertion and like doing sit-ups at the age of 8 and like sitting next to someone and then being like, oh, I want to get a 6-pack and they're like 10 years old, you know? So taking
Yes.
like, and you're just like, what? And then like, you're eating your snacks and like, everyone's just comparing what they're eating and you're like 10 years old. Like, that's so damaging looking back to me. Like, I think that that was kind of rooted in me and kind of manifested into my struggle with eating disorders. Like, everything growing up just kind of manifests into like this massive thing. But
right.
I kind of want to get back to the food as well. I feel like there's so much that like you do that I'm just like, I want to touch on everything. But this is something that I ask all of my like recipe developers, but you're more than a recipe developer. You're doing amazing things. And I kind of want to know, what are 3 of your favorite recipes so listeners can go check them out if they want? And you can choose more or less, whichever ones are like in your mind at the moment.
Okay. I'll do one sweet and one savory, because lately I've been eating my kale Caesar salad a lot. And that's just because like, it's so funny, but when I repost someone's story of like them having made my recipe, it makes me want to eat it. So then I'll make it again. But I think that's been one of my most popular recipes on the blog for years now. And then the other one is probably my maple tahini cookies, and they're super simple. They're not like the cutest cookies out there. They're just super duper simple. I kind of love that both of them are made with tahini. So I feel like you can get one jar and try both and have like dinner and dessert. But yeah, I think they're really great recipes because they're simple, and I like to keep things simple, nourishing, whole food, plant-based whenever possible. And tahini is an interesting ingredient. It's something that I never really loved before, maybe like 2 years ago. And then once I started mixing it with other things, I realized like how nice that little bit of bitterness was paired with like something sweet or something spicy or something citrusy. It's such a versatile ingredient. Mm-hmm. And, it's a great healthy fat. You know, there were definitely times in my life where I kind of felt like, I don't think I was ever afraid of fat, but I definitely felt like low fat was the way. And I think that's just like what we're told growing up, you know, but,
yeah.
Tahini is just such a delicious, healthy fat. It's so rich and buttery, and it's kind of like vegan butter in a way sometimes. Like, I get a really nice buttery shortbread texture from tahini and cookies. So yeah, probably one of my favorite ingredients to use.
Yeah. Same here. I'm obsessed with tahini. I will say that Seed&Mill is probably my favorite brand of all.
Yes.
It's amazing. And I put it in almost all my baked goods, but my family's like, oh, you put tahini in this, didn't you? I'm like, yeah, cause it's amazing. But I want to kind of tie this all up because literally I could talk about tahini and matcha with you forever, but I kind of want to.
And it's so great. We have such a similar taste palette, I feel like.
For sure. So I want to thank you for coming on. And I really truly believe that your message will pass along to other people. And I hope you have a great day.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Of course.
Okay. I'd like to say a huge thank you to tuning into this episode. If you guys could share it on Instagram or with your friends and family in real life, because truly nothing better than that, I would be very appreciative of that. And I'm going to leave all of my information to my amazing guests on the show notes. I'm going to be back in your ears real soon, and I hope you guys have a great week.